third case of the day, Rain v. Rolls-Royce Corporation. Mr. Conwell.
Hey, police court. I'm Edward McConwell. I represent David Rain and Paramount in this appeal. This case, to figure out this contract we're talking about, probably needs to go back to perspective that this contract was a part. There were three major defendants: Timken Companies, Alcor and Paramount, and David Rain, and a company called Heroes Inc. were defendants in this misappropriation trade secret case. Timken bailed out with settlement in December of 2005. Magistrate Shields had spent time with them, and then Magistrate Shields undertook to talk to the Paramount group, including David Rain. This is a settlement agreement that was negotiated over with Magistrate Shields being the facilitator, and I've got a reference to Judge Barker's reference to saying that she was the one that facilitated this settlement. We have her notes at page 97 to 100. In the record, the settlement was reached in about April. And there's a couple things in that settlement agreement that are fairly important, I believe. One of the points that she raised was that the parties, Rolls-Royce and their counsel and our parties, agreed that there was no criminal activity. Now, there were RICO claims in this underlying case. That case was settled on May 19th by an agreement that Judge Shield was in the middle of, and it was approved by the court and accepted by the court with continuing jurisdiction by the court to enforce the terms and conditions of the settlement. And there was also, when the overview of this, we have a single person, it's the sole owner of a corporation, fighting Rolls-Royce, a multinational corporation. He enters into this agreement to buy peace. One of the major provisions of this agreement was a non-disparagement provision. I think it was Section 2 of the agreement. It was a major part. The agreement contemplates, and there's language in the actual contract that says that so he can go ahead and do business as usual, and he wanted to just buy complete peace. There was a motion to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction pending at the time all this was taking place. And I'm not going to say he was coerced into the settlement, but there was a fair significant amount of pressure to settle because that's the policy of the courts, to encourage settlements, and mediation and settlement conferences are regularly ordered, and that was done in this case. And he went ahead and tried to buy peace. Now, there was nothing in this agreement that accepted that they could file another lawsuit at any time and rename David Rain as a person who had engaged in stealing and trafficking of stolen property, which in April of that year, 2006, they had agreed he had not done. Ultimately, the case against the remaining defendant, the Heroes Inc. people, was dismissed for lack of jurisdiction, as I believe that Rain's case would have been also. It was then we have the issue of the catch-the-way party, and a person could say, well, that's, you know, petty of somebody to complain about being thrown out of a major event like that. But that followed on the heels of that such circumstance, they refile the case in Texas and allege effectively that David Rain is engaging in selling stolen property and trafficking stolen property in RICO. Now, he's not named.
Can I ask you a question,
yeah.
Mr. McConnell?
You've just been talking
about an agreement that by Rolls-Royce that your client did not do anything criminal.
Absolutely.
Where do we see that in the
agreement?
It's
in the agreement. There's a press release. And if you go back and look at Judge Shield's notes on page, I think it's on page 99.
Is it in the agreement or is it in her
notes?
It
was in the original agreement and then it's in the final agreement. Now, it's in a little bit different context. There was a press release that's referred to in the record where they announced to the world, effectively, that there was no criminal activity involved in this situation, in the underlying deal.
Do we have the press release?
You know, I was looking last night. I thought it was attached to that. It's certainly in the record, and it tracks very closely to Judge Shields' notes in April, which is on, as I say, page 99, or the type version. Her handwritten notes are just before.
Can you direct me to the provision in the settlement agreement itself, not the judge's notes, but the settlement agreement itself?
There is, I think it was section, I think it was paragraph 5, is what I think. And I might also say, by the way, going a little bit further, the settlement agreement is a paragraph, or it's a 104 of the record. And the reference in the agreement itself was to an issuance of a press release dealing with that, and it attached the reference to the press release, which we agreed to the language, which is effectively that there was no criminal intent.
Do we have the press release?
You know, I thought it was in the record, Your Honor, and I don't believe that it is attached to this, my copy of the record, at least.
Thank you.
I'll try to get that before we get my rebuttal part of it, but there was an absolute press release issued by Rolls-Royce, and we have Judge Shields or Judge Barker's order, and it's at page starting at it deals with that specific issue starting at page 139, where what happened is Rolls-Royce released a press release and sent it to the AP on the 10 or 6 o'clock at night on the 30th of June, and it never appeared anywhere, and we asked to be able to do it again later, 6 or 7 months later, and Judge Barker's entry on page 1, starting at 139, is docket 405 from the other case, deals with this press release and the fact that Rain was able to republicize the press release, and it deals with the actual language, I believe, of that release. Anyway, the issue is, this is a valid, enforceable contract? And we believe that's where you have to start. And I will refer you to page 54 of the record on the answer of Rolls-Royce, where Rolls-Royce alleged in a counterclaim that they ultimately abandoned that this is a valid, enforceable agreement. And I say valid, enforceable in all sense. The terms of this agreement are the terms of this agreement are clear and unambiguous. There's nothing in this agreement that would allow this suit. It was to buy total peace. I think I gave you the wrong page on that. It starts at page 54. But the actual is page 64, paragraph 2 of the counterclaim. The CSA is a valid and enforceable agreement. They make that allegation on page 64 of their counterclaim. And that's the start point, as we understand it in Indiana law, for determining. You have to presume that this contract is valid, and then you go back, and there's three factors that you go through to look at with regard to whether or not the contract should be, there should be some exception. And the there's a public policy that deals with the settlement of disputes, we think is one that weighs into this, then the absolute privilege public policy. But the absolute privilege public policy does have exceptions to it. Indiana has never ruled on that. But Indiana, the rule in Indiana in the Trotter case that I've cited in the brief, Your Honor, states very clearly that there are five tests that you go through to determine the balancing the facts to decide whether a contract prevails or another policy. And when you go back and look at the nature and the subject matter of this contract to buy his total peace for a misappropriation case, and a disparagement is an integral part of that contract that's negotiated with the assistance of a United States magistrate. If there was something that they wanted to reserve, Rolls-Royce wanted to reserve in this case for filing a lawsuit and naming as a pseudonym or some other basis acts that were committed by Mr. Rain, they should have done it. But clearly the allegations are disparaging in the Texas case. There's a clear disparity in the bargaining power of these people. It's a serious forfeiture.
How would this apply, Mr. McConwell?
Yes, sir.
If somebody from Rolls-Royce were on a witness stand and was being asked about Mr. Rain's activities?
I think they would have to testify honestly.
Truth, the whole truth, nothing
Absolutely.
But the truth. Absolutely.
Okay. In this instance, that truth wouldn't
matter.
No
matter what the contract says, right?
That's exactly right.
So why doesn't that reasoning extend to this situation?
Because they have initiated something. They haven't gone in and been subpoenaed involuntarily. They voluntarily did this. They didn't involuntarily come in and did this. They voluntarily made these allegations. They were subpoenaed.
Now, we're all familiar with the idea that a settlement agreement can release claims against non-parties or third parties.
That's
right?
Correct.
Did this agreement do that?
No.
Okay. If I understand what you're saying, though, it had that effect, right? Because you're saying that Rolls-Royce could not bring a lawsuit against third parties if, in the course of that, they would have to say something bad about your client.
Of course, we say they did not have to say anything bad about our client. They agreed they wouldn't disparage him.
Is the test necessity for those allegations? Because surely it's okay for them to sue those third parties, right?
Absolutely. There was a lawsuit pending.
Right. Well, they filed it. That was okay, right?
That's correct.
So your real objection is just that they said anything about Mr. Rain.
That they were not to disparage him.
And in your view, would Indiana apply a test of necessity in that situation? Or would it apply a test of materiality or something else?
I think it might apply a test of materiality. I don't think it would apply a test of necessity.
Were these allegations immaterial to the RICO allegations against the third parties?
I believe they weren't necessary.
You just said necessity is not the test. Were they material
to
the allegations of the RICO enterprise, where they have to allege an enterprise?
I don't think that they were material.
Why not?
I don't think that they were material. Well, first of all, they have to be truthful in order to make that.
To take advantage of the litigation privilege, you don't have to be truthful.
Well, I understand.
We don't get into that, so forget about that.
But there is an exception if you go in, you testify about something that's totally off the wall.
Well, that's why we're talking about materiality, right?
It is our view that the allegations were not necessary or material to their being able to pursue.
Why were they not material?
Because they weren't necessary for them to prove or to make the allegations against Heroes, Inc.
You've just shifted from materiality to necessity after telling me necessity was not the test.
I don't believe that they were material either, Your Honor.
And why not?
Because, as I say...
You've seen their argument. They say, look, we're alleging racketeering violations. We've got to put together allegations and prove the existence of an enterprise, and we think Rain was part of the enterprise. Why isn't that material?
Well, it would be, except for the fact they have contractually agreed not to do it, and they've contractually known and agreed that there was no criminal activity by Rain. That's the problem. I mean, you got...
Well, not every member of the enterprise has to be involved in criminal activity.
I think it does. I think it does. If they're accusing him of stealing and involving in stolen trafficking and stolen property, so I think he has to be involved in criminal activity. and they've agreed that he was not. So he can't even go in and do a malicious prosecution case now that those allegations are gone from that case. And there's just been a summary judgment on most of their misappropriation case. So his remedy is contract. His remedy is contract. And you have to go through and balance the tests in Indiana. Let me save about a minute if I can.
Thank you.
Before you start, there's a button under there which means you can lower the table a little bit.
Can you see me?
Just pull the microphone down a little bit.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Libby Moat, and I am representing Rolls-Royce Corporation in this matter. With me is my colleague Max Hiddle and our Vice President General Counsel of Rolls-Royce, Eric Peterson. Initially, I wanted to address a couple of things that were raised during Mr. McConwell's argument. He referenced Magistrate Judge Shield's notes and related to the settlement. It is our position that that material was irrelevant. There was an integration clause in the settlement agreement, and in fact, Judge Lawrence specifically noted that the notes were irrelevant to a determination of the meaning of the settlement agreement.
I'm just interested in how the notes of Judge Shields become possessed by parties. How did this come about?
In the context of the brokering of the settlement agreement, she had put some points together for the parties to consider and shared those points with the parties. And ultimately,
you haven't been in a settlement conference with Judge Shields. With all due respect.
Clearly.
She essentially shows it to the parties. And and ultimately,
critical. I'm just making an inquiry, Ms.
A perfectly legitimate question. Ultimately, the agreement was distilled down to the settlement agreement, which governs here.
I see. Thank you.
Mr. McConwell also could not locate the press release. That's at separate appendix, page 103, in the summary judgment materials. The suggestion that there was an agreement, that there had been no wrongdoing in that underlying litigation, is inaccurate. In fact, the settlement agreement, the whole purpose of the settlement agreement was to bring back documents that were admittedly in their in Rain and Paramount's possession that were determined to be trade secrets. There was an obligation that he scrubbed his computers clean.
Was there anything that said what the party had done were not, was not illegal?
There was a press release that said...
Is that part of the contract, the press
It release? Is attached to the settlement agreement as a schedule.
And it was part of the agreement?
Yes.
Okay.
And the press release specifically said that there was no suggestion of criminal misconduct in this case, and it specifically had the caption for the underlying litigation in Indiana. That did not preclude Rolls-Royce from continuing to protect its trade secrets in another litigation related to other defendants. So the press release did not exclude Rolls-Royce from doing that.
I asked this only because I never saw a press release as part of a contract. I learn something new every day. That's why I'm here.
There was a lot of questioning of Mr. McConwell of the test that is applied when determining whether the absolute litigation privilege applies. Indiana law makes very clear that the test is whether or not the allegations are relevant and pertinent. Indiana law also makes very clear that that test is to be liberally applied and construed. In this case, it is our position that the allegations in the complaint were relevant. They related specifically to pleading a RICO enterprise and association in fact. Even if the suggestion is that there be no allegation of criminal misconduct, there is no allegation of criminal misconduct against Rain and Paramount in the Texas complaint. It is a civil proceeding. It is alleging civil RICO and identifying them solely for the purposes of identifying them as part of the RICO enterprise.
Does every member of that enterprise have to have committed criminal conduct to be a member of the enterprise?
No, there was only allegations, if you look at the counts in the complaint, there was only allegations against the defendants in that case, Heroes and Hi-Tech.
The fact that it's a civil case doesn't really get you away from criminal allegations. If you're accusing those defendants of in a civil RICO case, you're charging them with a crime, right?
Technically, that's true, but our position is that we did not make any allegations criminally against these...
Against Rain.
Against Rain, mm-hmm. and that the press release was only related to allegations of criminal conduct or suggestion of criminal conduct in that particular case with the particular caption. In addition to the standard, the very liberal standard that's applied to relevant and pertinent statements made in pleadings, the bar for Rain and Paramount to overcome that is incredibly high. Under Indiana law, it must be so palpably irrelevant to the subject matter of the controversy that no reasonable man can doubt its irrelevancy and impropriety. It is our position that Rain and Paramount could not have possibly met that burden in this case. The reality is that Paramount and Rain have not been deprived of the benefit of their bargain, and they got exactly what they negotiated. In this case, there was a universal law in Indiana and elsewhere that recognized an absolute litigation privilege. The settlement agreement specifically provides in paragraph 11 that the rights and remedies under that agreement are cumulative to and not exclusive of any rights or remedies otherwise available. Rolls-Royce didn't need to spell out every single common law rule that it enjoyed any rights under within the confines of that settlement agreement. It was up to Rain to provide an exception if he wanted the non-disparagement clause to extend to a statement that was normally, under the law, considered immune. This is not an enforcement issue. This is an immunity issue. Nobody is disputing, and Rolls-Royce has never disputed, that the contract is valid and enforceable. The issue is whether or not statements made in a pleading give rise to liability for breach of contract. Mr. Rain did not consider the absolute immunity privilege in extending the non-disparagement clause, and he is getting exactly what he bargained for. The policy of parties' freedom to contract is still available to Rain and Paramount. If Rolls-Royce were to say something outside of a litigation or outside of judicial pleadings, it would not enjoy the benefit of the absolute litigation privilege. The fact that the party's freedom to contract is being enforced here is no more evident than the fact that there were 2 days of trial on the issue of whether or not Rolls-Royce had disparaged Rain at the Catch the Wave event. This is not an issue of enforcement. This is an issue of immunity. Indiana law makes clear that the immunity, that the privilege and the purpose behind it, the public interest in freedom of expression in judicial proceedings, is so vital, so integral, and so necessary to the judicial system that it is paramount to all other legal remedies. Breach of contract is just another legal remedy, just like a tort claim is. The law in
Except
Indiana...
You voluntarily agreed to some limits. So why did you've looked at the California court's decision in Wendland?
I have.
Do you think they're wrong, and why?
Well, there are a number of reasons why Wendland doesn't apply. Well, first of all, our position is that that argument by Rain and Paramount is waived because they didn't raise that during the initial summary judgment proceedings. Be that as it may, Wendland is distinguishable for a number of reasons. In that case, there was not an allegation of a violation of a non-disparagement clause. There was an allegation of a violation of a confidentiality provision. That's very different. There was an agreement in Wendland that
the
parties...
Here the confidentiality provision was violated on the other side, right?
Correct.
I take it you all have dropped any claim on that basis?
Well, at this point, and I believe Judge Lawrence noted in the trial that at this point all of the proceedings, including those related to the settlement agreement, would be public. And so in Wendland, that was a very different situation where, in that case, the defendant had attached a settlement agreement containing certain provisions to an agreement, and there was an allegation that the agreement had been breached. There was also some agreement in that Wendland v. Wass case that, you know, there was an agreement that anything that we said about you will now, from here on forth, be maintained as confidential. So that's a distinguishing factor here. In this case, the contract terms were kept confidential, but there was nothing said that we would no longer make any statements about him or be confidential about that. In fact, there was a press release about this very settlement. In addition to why it's not controlling, the law in California is a little different than Indiana. California cases have limited, generally, the litigation privilege to tort claims. Indiana law has never done that. There is no Indiana law carving out breach of contract claims from the privilege. And, in fact, Indiana's law is so broad that it recognizes the privilege as paramount to all other legal remedies. Even Wendland, though, if you believe that it is controlling, doesn't exclude the application of the privilege to breach of contract cases. In fact, it recognizes that there are certain situations in which it would be appropriate. It just so happened that in that particular case, it wasn't. So we don't believe that Wendland requires a different result. In terms of any disparaging conduct that occurred at Catch the Wave, we believe this is a question of fact. The judge heard the evidence, saw the witnesses, weighed the evidence, and assessed the credibility of the witnesses, and that's not something that should be reconsidered by this court here. This court has regularly applied, interpreted the term disparagement, consistent with the court here, and that ruling should not be disturbed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moe.
With regard to the definition of disparagement on a catch-a-wave event, we just say the court used the wrong definition. I mean, it'd be like if one of your marshals came up and grabbed me by the arm and whispered in my ear and ushered me out of here. That would be demeaning and disparaging to me and embarrassing to me if there was no reason for that type of situation. And that's kind of what we have. The judge found that.
You gotta be careful; you might reach that point.
but it's, you know, that we just think he applied the wrong definition. He found it was done in front of customers. It doesn't have to be a oral act. It can be something that a customer observed. The judge found it was an embarrassing type demeaning situation. He just didn't apply the right definition to that, in our view. Now, there's a difference in the Indiana law, which has never dealt with this issue of the contracts. Indiana law deals with the torts and defamation and the like. That's what the Indiana law is. Now, the Texas case that we did cite to you said that the Texas case where the act occurred here, by the way, the filing of this case, would recognize a disparagement if you're not getting defamation-type damages. Now, there's this liquidated damage provision, and that may be what was wrong with the ruling of Judge Lawrence's view, because it was so much money, because it sounded like a lot of money. But clearly we believe that they have breached it, they contracted not to, and that this contract is high preference for contract should prevail.
Thank you, Mr. McConnell. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.